Chapter 26. 96 babies due in 48 hours, more than double the usual average. The fertility center was at maximum capacity and running behind. Necking a third midnight coffee, Kelsey rubbed her eyes and scanned the list of expectant parents, ensuring they hadn't missed any commissions. Her eyes lingered on the penultimate family. The Broxleys were due to receive triplets the day after tomorrow. Kelsey grimaced, seeing their zip code. She'd been fostered in that area, and it was no place to raise a family. She paced the room, wringing her hands as Nina and Sophia's tearful pleas rang in her ears. Kelsey drew the blinds and stuffed a sheet of ministry-headed paper into her typewriter. She copied the Broxley's birth commission form, changing only the parents' names. Splitting up the triplets wasn't an option. It would cause too much of a paper trail. An automaton glided into the office. Kelsey froze, fingers hovering above the keyboard. The machine delivered a chemical report, then paused, noting the Broxley's open certificate. "That will be all, thank you," she quavered. The machine gave her a modest bow and glided away. Snatching the forged document from her typewriter, she placed it among the authentic commissions. She tucked the original birth certificate in her jacket pocket, knowing she would need to dispose of it away from prying eyes. With her fingers trembling, she forged an announcement letter for the triplets, then hurried from the office. Kelsey parked her car a few blocks away, then approached on foot. She counted down the sleeping households until she reached Sophia and Nina's home. An argument raged upstairs in the only illuminated room. As Kelsey tried to listen in, a cacophony of barking erupted before her. She sprang back as the neighbor's dog snarled against the fence. Kelsey thrust her forged letter in the couple's mailbox and beat a hasty retreat. The midnight streets were quiet, and she was home within 20 minutes. Michael was pacing the living room in his pajamas, apparently rearranging the books on the shelf.
"Michael, go to bed,"
she yawned, stepping through the door.
"Ditto that," he said, taking her jacket, chivalrously.
"Leave it," snapped Kelsey, snatching it back from him. "I'll meet you upstairs. I need a minute."
"Everything okay?" he asked.
"Work stuff. How come you're up so late?"
"Couldn't sleep. I was thinking about, well, you know. So I tried distracting myself with a bit of feng shui. Like what I've done with the place?"
He gestured to the shelves, which he had stripped of books and transformed into a photographic shrine to their children. "Did you take your meds?"
"They were delicious. My compliments to the chef, whoever that is.
Probably some faceless automaton knowing the ministry," he yawned, heading upstairs.
Kelsey waited until Michael was in the bathroom, then set about hiding the letter. She knew she ought to burn it, but she couldn't risk someone finding her in the kitchen mid-act, and the garden was equally risky, unless she wanted to make a show of it and stoke an entire bonfire as a ruse. No, it had to be quick and discreet. Somewhere she could light a flame. The basement. Kelsey seldom ventured into the basement. It was very much Michael's personal cave, where he lived out his frustrated engineering dreams with half-complete model trains and matchstick bridges. She surveyed his messy empire and wondered what might have become of his career if he hadn't borne the brunt of the childcare. He was a loving father, if overprotective, but he'd loosened up since the medication started. He was sleeping full nights again, which was a huge turning point for them. Kelsey tried the desk drawers, searching for a lighter, but they were locked. A clatter upstairs. Someone was fetching a drink from the kitchen. She had to act fast. No time to burn it. She would have to hide the letter and come back later. Maybe that was for the best, anyway. Knowing the ministry burned letters probably released some sort of chemical that the automatons can sense. In fact, the more she thought about it, the more dangerous the idea of burning it seemed. This was not a situation she'd ever anticipated, and her only choice now was to adopt the least bad option. She approached the shelving and looked for the dustiest item there. It was an old chocolate box. She popped the lid open and peered inside. Her heart softened as she discovered the treasure trove of childhood postcards from Michael's grandparents. Kelsey perched on Michael's shabby work seat, ignoring the chunks of foam that protruded through the torn fabric. She barely recognized the old man in the photograph. She'd only met Amal once when he was alive, when she'd fished him out of a river. Back then, he'd looked so lost. Here, he looked vibrant. She could see where Michael got his cheeky glint from. The handwriting on the next card was familiar. It was from Michael's mother, wishing him good luck with his exams at elementary school, and another for his mid-grade exams. Kelsey stared at the words on the page and felt a sadness in the pit of her stomach, seeing the love and encouragement she'd never received as a child. She thought of the consternation she'd gotten from her foster parents, the rows that would break out if she asked for textbooks, the fight she got into at school when other kids called her out for having smelly clothes, the derisive attitude towards education and the authorities that had prevailed in the household she'd passed through. If it wasn't for the mining accident and Michael's mom agreeing to be her sponsor, maybe she'd never have climbed out of that rut. Plucking the last item from the tin, she marveled at the inscription. Michael Sr., loving father, beloved husband. Below it was an order of service, detailing songs and readings and the reception address. Flipping the card over, Kelsey gasped as she saw Michael's father for the first time. There were no photos of him anywhere in the house, nor at Val's or Sophia's places. The man was the spitting image of his son. Kelsey recognized that melancholic smile at once, the look of someone very much in love and very much treading water. She stroked the photo and covered her mouth as tears formed across her eyes. Shoving the cards back into the tin, Kelsey buried the stolen birth certificate deep among them. She stowed the tin away, ensuring it aligned with the shelf's dust marks. Creeping back upstairs, Kelsey climbed into bed and took Michael in her arms. "I'll always be here for you, no matter what. I hope you know that," she whispered. He patted her hand hazily. "Me too, my love." Kelsey woke in a cold sweat. It was 5 a.m. and a terrifying thought had struck her. Grabbing her jacket and keys, she bolted for the car. She'd been so preoccupied with delivering the forged certificate, she'd forgotten about the original. In less than an hour, the Broxleys would receive their authentic baby letter from the ministry. She had to intercept it, or the whole plan would be exposed. Kelsey sped across town to her old foster district. Her gleaming car jarred against the decrepit, burned-out shells dotting the sidewalk. She scoured the broken windows, fallen fences, and boarded doorways. The neighborhood was abandoned. The ministry had removed the residents' mailboxes, leaving only the narrow post protruding from wild ground. Yet two parents were due to receive a child somewhere around here, in a matter of hours. With the Broxley's address etched in her mind, she counted down the houses, continuing until she reached the end of the street. Her mouth fell as she reached a crossroads. A new estate stretched ahead for several blocks. The front gardens were manicured and the homes beautifully renovated. Kelsey slowed to a crawl, drinking in the pristine neighborhood until she reached the Broxley's house. The gentle rays of dawn caressed the pastel window frames and velvety lawn. Ditching the car, Kelsey hurried over, wincing as the gate squeaked open. Screwdriver in hand, she crept toward the family mailbox. In all her years, she had never examined one in detail. There were no rivets to unscrew. It fused seamlessly with the enamel pipe rising from the grass. Besides the keyhole, the only way in was the narrow hand delivery slit between the hood and the front panel. Forcing the screwdriver into the slit, she levered down. It held firm, so Kelsey threw her full body weight against the handle. The screwdriver slipped out, slamming Kelsey to the ground and grazing her knuckles on the way. Cradling her bleeding hand, she fished for a handkerchief in her pocket. She wiped down the mailbox, then tied it around her knuckles as a bandage. With no alternative, she plucked out a hair clip and turned her attention to the lock. Engine noises pricked her ears as a cleaning cart approached. The automaton in charge was driving the suction van close to the curb, while two humans paced ahead, sweeping leaves and litter off the sidewalk into its path. Kelsey scrambled away from the approaching workers, pressing herself flush against the side of the house. Her screwdriver lay abandoned on the lawn, glinting in the morning sun. Kelsey held her breath as the workers approached. Neither batted an eye at the splatters of blood on the grass beside it. In the room above Kelsey's hiding place, an alarm clock rang. A light flicked on, and a pair of sleepy voices muttered to each other. Cursing, Kelsey darted for her screwdriver. She snatched it off the ground, wiped the last of the blood splatters up as best she could, and smoothed the chipped paintwork on the mailbox with her thumb. At a glance, it looked normal, but on the slightest closer inspection, the scratch marks told a different story altogether. Kelsey hurried through the open gate and sprinted to her car. she sped home, making it across town in just 15 minutes. On arrival, she checked their own mailbox, which was mercifully empty, then slipped back into bed beside Michael. His feet were cold and damp, but she didn't have the bandwidth to ponder why. Her head was already spinning. She had broken the law and failed to cover her tracks. Consequences were coming, and she knew it.